This is Pure Decking for Thursday, November the 1st, 1952. This is the show about stuff that interests me. I'm Morps, and tonight we have the BSV.
Now it's like a proper intro.
The Sard. And the Suave, who I'm sorry, Suave, I don't have any intro music for you.
Aww. I'm really disappointed. I was really looking forward to see what you had for me. Oh, maybe next time.
Yeah, crickets. Maybe next time.
Crickets.
Crickets.
There you go.
Well, I have to plan that out a little bit better. So, me playing around with the software aside, what's everybody drinking tonight?
Pyramid.
Gin tonic.
Nice. Nice. A little bit of devil's cut, so careful because that shit sneaks up on you. And just a little bit of quick station news. We have swapped broadcast boxes yet again. I was facing the prospect of a mutiny because I kept messing with it, so I had to actually put it back to the way it was. I don't know if that's the right way to phrase it. We updated the software and went back to a setup more familiar to several of the other users besides myself. Than what we had tried to go to in the past, something I thought... We had tried to move to the Linux project Liquid Soap. And very powerful project. It just doesn't have an interface. And whereas that didn't bother me, because I don't mind using command line, apparently it bothered a few of the other people who helped run the station. So we're back on the old system before, which means we've swapped systems yet again, so there might be some bumps in the road. Stream might go up and down a little bit. You'll notice we haven't been playing the bumpers and the ads for the other shows. Obviously, we haven't got any shows other than the live ones going in rotation yet. We're working on it. We're going to get that back up soon-ish, sometime. I don't know. We got to have a conference at a powwow and get an RFP involved and see if we can get purchasing to give us the go. I don't know. Sorry.
There's probably going to be an NDA involved.
Yeah, it's an NDA or two, and... We might even have to hire a lawyer, for God's sake. That's wow. No, I'm not dealing with bullshit at work. Not at all. Why do you ask? Shit. Anyways,
just remember, if you get anything in the mail from G15, just sign it and mail it back.
Yeah, it sure it says power of attorney. Don't worry about that. That's normal. Now, wow. I don't know. Sard, you're helping me out with the broadcast box here. Do you got anything you want to add there before we hop into the show?
No, not really. I mean, like I said, we were going to have a talk about it a little bit or whatever, but then I have backups of all of our old programming, so once we get everything decided out, I'll just a matter of restoring, and hopefully it'll work out of the box, and we'll get up and be going again.
Cool. Alright, well, yeah, like I said, that's... I completely lost my train of thought there. Yeah, so broadcast box, but it's actually working quite well. So it's just a matter of configuration now. We've got the thing built. And I'm hoping to see it bring the production quality of some of the other shows up since we figured out some neat tricks with it. So
we can play our own intros.
Yeah, you don't have to have me kicking around to hit play on the button for you, which is nice. So anyways, just to hop right into the discussion here, I got thinking about this a lot, essentially, because I've had some crap going on at work, and I've had a financial institution beating me over the head lately. And it's not that they owe me money. So don't anybody get worked up over anything. They owe me money. It's not like anything horrible. It's just a pain in the ass. So, but anyways, so I got thinking about the rights of companies or organizations, but companies and corporations are probably your primary example, versus the rights of individuals. Because, well, you know, obviously a show like this, first thing you're going to say was, well, obviously the right of the individual is paramount, right? Well, if you get thinking about it, it gets kind of weird kind of quick. Because if the rights of the individual are paramount, you can make it so damned hard and expensive to run a corporation that sells a product or a service that they just won't do it and you'll run all your businesses off, right? It's like, well, no, you have to check everything in triplicate, and the moment somebody asks for a refund, you don't even get to question it. You have to give it to them, and all this timeliness. I mean, it'll make it so prohibitively expensive to do anything. So
wouldn't that force companies to put out a more quality product and better support their products?
Well, that's just it. They just wouldn't put out a product, right? It's like, well, nope, this ain't worth it. So,
well, I mean, it would force, I think, legitimate people that want a good product to be put out there to force them, kind of weed out the, thin out the herd.
Yeah,
well, that's certainly a possibility. That's why I want to talk about it, right? So, politics and examples of bad actors aside, what should the ideal be? Because if, like I was trying to say, if you're favoring individuals over organizations or companies, it can make it very difficult to do business. You could see prices go up, jobs go away. That could be a problem. On the other hand, if you're favoring organizations over individuals, that means you have, less consumer protection. You'd need more work on the part of the consumers to protect themselves, to do product research before they buy something, or make sure a company's reputable before doing something with them,
So pretty much you're talking about how it is right now.
Yeah, kinda. I mean, I'm not talking about... I'm trying to find the ideal example, something we can use to model. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'm not wanting to get into specific examples of company A versus company B versus scam artist C versus, person who's getting, raped by a financial institution that won't give them their money, D. let's.
Well, like, I don't have a specific system in mind that's going to solve all our problems and work flawlessly or anything like that. And really, like, there probably isn't, like, one specific set of ways of doing things. It's going to be different institutions and different sets of rules that are going to work better for different areas, different cultures, different sets of resources and stuff like that.
Sure.
But, in regards to the rights of the, individual... they definitely do need to be paramount to an extent, just because, they are the consumer. They are what it basically drives an economy. If nobody was consuming anything, then nothing. So they definitely need to be protected, and there's a lot of situations where they're not, and that's really unfortunate, and that definitely needs to be addressed. I feel like there's definitely a lot of laws that go too far. I feel like that's not good for the economy.
Right. I'm not a fan of regulation. I'd like to have as little of it as required. Like, find that bare minimum happy medium of you're regulating something and then no more. Anything above and beyond that is a problem, and it's just wasting money, time, bureaucracy, whatever, right? So, my personal view is always, let's find the absolute bare minimum necessary when it comes to regulation and interference from a governing body, and leave it at that. But, I mean, you want the exact bare minimum and no less, because you don't want... I don't know. What's the can't say? It says meat. that's not something you want either. But by the same principle, if the can just says meat and it's sitting next to another one that is actually something that looks good and healthy, wouldn't that promote companies to put out better products?
That's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, it's a rough argument. Go ahead, Sard. Go ahead.
I don't know. I was just agreeing. I guess I don't know.
Okay, fair enough.
The consumer always comes first in my mind.
Okay. Well, I mean, this seems to be this is the argument that seems to be at the root of a lot of stuff we talk about on the show. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, just as an example, I didn't put it in because I didn't find a write up I liked of it. But PayPal has changed their terms of use, and if you don't mail them something, you know, an opt out by I think it's December 1st or something like that. You, or maybe it's November 30th. I don't remember. It's sometime near the end of this month. They, you no longer have the right to join a class action lawsuit against them, that you have waived that right as a function of using PayPal.
Ooh.
So, you know, when you talk about things here, you got to really be careful. And this is something that comes up a lot when you're talking about regulations. You don't want to go too far and overregulate a business, because the business has rights too. But I'm not particularly a fan of PayPal saying, okay, the agreement is now this, and you know, they're changing the deal after you've made it, right?
Yeah.
And they're making a total pain in the ass to try and opt out of that new deal.
Yeah, no, you actually have to mail something in. Go ahead,
Ben. Yeah, that's bullshit. Yeah.
Well, the whole just them or companies and that just making a blanket statement that you, by use of, you agree to these terms always seems bad, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, I mean, everybody hides behind those terms of use. And terms of use does kind of serve an important point. I mean, if I'm providing internet service for somebody, I want to be able to say, look, I'm not going to be responsible for anything you do. Any problems you cause are your fault, and that's a term of use. Yeah. But
well,
it's also a reasonable one.
Yeah. Stuff like that is good, but it's like this, where you can't sue us if you use our product.
Now, yeah. I feel like different situations would apply for this. Like, you know, I feel like if it's a free product that you are not paying anything for, they shouldn't have to make any sort of guarantees towards you because you're not paying for a service or a product. Now, if you're paying a subscription or you've paid a flat rate or something like that for access to this product, then I think there needs to be more protections for you.
Okay. No, I like that. I like that concept. You know, if you're actually handing over cash, then a bunch of stuff should kick in. But, well, like, you know, we always talk about the media companies, RIAA, MPA. They just beat people over the head with copyrights and DMCA notifications and just, I mean, anybody who has to deal with this stuff on a regular basis like I do, I mean, they literally just, I mean, it's like every minute you read some of the languages of these notices you get, it's just insane. The, you know, the level of compliance they expect you to do, you know, several hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of development, monitoring, and compliance to protect their property.
Yeah.
And now they have a right to copyright. I mean, copyright is a legitimate, you know, intellectual property is a legitimate thing. Otherwise, you know, you sell. In this day and age, it's a little bit weird. It used to be, because it was difficult to make a copy of something, it wasn't that big of a deal. But mm-hmm. today, where you can literally copy anything you want as many times as you want, it becomes an issue, right?
Oh, I mean, yeah.
You sell a CD. If you don't have any protections on that CD, like if you have no recourse, if somebody just copies and reproduces it and sells millions of copies on their own.
I'm in favor of tighter regulation on copyright, as long as they reform copyright laws to actually reflect
the length of its
needs of society. Because, like, you know, for one thing, I feel like copyright is held for too long, and it stifles innovation. Generally, you know, you're probably going to make the majority of what you're going to make off of an invention the first, like, 10 years, maybe 20 years. You know, 25 years should be out of copyright. You know, same thing goes for patents and stuff like that.
Yeah, and, I mean, this whole life of the author plus 75 years on copyright. No, patents are ridiculous. Limited. It's like 14 years or something like that, isn't it? But patents are limited, but copyright is just ridiculous. And you're right, because you've got a generation and 75 years. So, you know, let's what's average lifespan? 70. So we'll just double it. So that's 140 years that this content is owned. And there's a real argument there that you are locking down culture, because, I don't know, the popular song, the TV show that everybody sees, that's culture, right? I mean, that's author, literary work, whatever. So, you know, shared experience, right? Media, whatever. But
the Happy Birthday song is copywritten then.
Yeah, no, and
that,
it still
how
is.
How ingrained is that in society?
Yeah, so I mean, you're locking down culture with that, so that's a problem, and that's you know, where I'd like to side with the individual on that, because it's like, you know, nobody's making money on file sharing networks, right? That judgment of LimeWire for more money than exists, a little bit silly. But you know, then you flip it around. What about all this? You know, you've got all these scammers that are defrauding banks and stores and financial institutions with, you know, ID theft and credit fraud. And, you know, you have all these little individual scams all over the place. And, you know, you do. You have the pirates out there. So when you want to talk about intellectual property, you do have lots of people out there copying your shit and not paying for it. Now, the business argument is how many of those people would have paid for it anyways. So there's, you know, my guess would be not a lot. But, you know, they count every one of them as a missed sale, right? So, but you flip it around. There are scams that go on. There are people who take advantage of the consumer protection laws to just really, really, I mean.
Oh, yeah.
You take a grocery store that has a really lenient return policy. I used to work at one years ago. And you'd have people who would walk in, they'd steal shit off the shelves, you know, walk out, walk back in, and return it to get the cash. Because, you know, they didn't have to have a receipt because the store had a real generous return policy. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you knew they were doing it, right? You sit there and watch them do it. And the policy is so strict because the store is so worried about lawsuits, you can't say shit. You have to give them the money and let them leave.
Yeah.
And, I mean, so, you know, you flip it around the other way. There are people who really take advantage of some of these protections that are out there.
Oh, yeah.
So I can certainly understand the argument going the other way.
Yeah, and you know, like, I feel like they really need to, like, change a lot of these ideas behind intellectual property and, well, media, for the most part. And their current pricing models and distribution models are really outdated. Yeah. And, you know, like, people want things that are convenient, and I'm constantly reading about people who go out and pirate something because they can't get it to work with the DRM on their system, or they want to be able to play it offline or something like that. Or, you know, like, even just like people pirating music and movies and all this other sort of stuff, like, that's happening and that's going to happen regardless. What they should be trying to do is to capitalize on that. And, you know, like, there's actually a lot of artists and individuals who've actually profited off of piracy. You know, a lot of video game companies and stuff like that see a huge, massive spike of sales after their game is pirated and put online. You know, like, look at Terraria. They were actually in, like, a closed beta, and somebody leaked their code, and it got crazy popular on the internet. And they ended up just forcing them to go into open beta. And because of that, they got hugely popular, and, you know, they made a parted amount of sales on that. So, you know, like, there needs to be a way to, like, get these products out there. And, like, you know, they're constantly saying, oh, yeah, well, like, all of these downloads, you know, all these lost sales. You know, when I didn't have high-speed internet, I bought maybe 6 movies a year. Now that I can stream stuff online, stuff like that, I still buy, you know, 6 movies a year. So that hasn't changed. I'm still spending just as much money. It's just, you know, like, instead of, like, sitting watching, like, cable, you're streaming stuff off the internet. Or, you know, instead of, like, you know, reading a book, you're playing a video game or something like that. So it's not like there's people are spending less money on this stuff. It's just that it's a different system, and people really need to just embrace it, and you can actually profit with it.
Well, it sounds like sounds like we're not going to reach a conclusion. It's just going to be taken on a case-by-case basis, so...
Well, that's kind of the way you have to do with...
Yeah,
it's not,
I don't know.
Something you can just draw a line and it'll work everywhere.
Well, obviously, no. That's why I was trying to say, throw out politics, throw out bad actors. Let's just try to find what the ideal model is and then use that to try to draft a basis. But obviously... We're not going to get there. That's okay. I mean, I don't have it either. So I don't have any, you know, I'm not criticizing you guys for not coming up with it, obviously, because I don't know what it is. It's just, it's something I've been thinking about a lot because and you're going to see in a lot of the stories I have, not the first one, but a lot of the stories I have for this evening, that same thing of, you know, who are we supposed to be helping? Who are we supposed to be protecting here? So. But let's go ahead and move on to our current events. The first story I have is from the H Online. While some antivirus vendors have a problem with Microsoft's newest operating system, the cybercrime community has already jumped on the Windows 8 train. For example, a Google-hosted site for €40, a remote administration tool called Extreme Rat, which is already Windows 8 compatible, is available with free updates included. I love these malware authors. It's like, oh yeah, free updates for a year, man. The list of built-in functions makes it clear that developers were not offering a tool that provides simple administration of remote computers. The tool includes, among other functions, a keylogger, which can store the recorded keystrokes to any FTP server and can capture passwords from all major browsers. Extreme Rat also transmits the screen contents to the admin and taps webcams and microphones. So, yeah, the people in your computer really can see and hear you. anybody who wasn't listening to the stream earlier won't get that joke. The developer advertises that his tool can trick data execution prevention and that the latest version works with the so-called CryptTerm. These are special programs that arrange executable files to impede detection by antivirus software. It is hard to imagine that these functions are looked for in legitimate remote access tool. I love the way this is written. Antivirus programs are also of the opinion that Extreme Rat is not quite kosher. On a virtual machine test run by the H Associates at High Security, the Extreme Rat server software was immediately quarantined by Windows Defender. At VirusTotal, it was detected by 38 out of the 43 virus scanners, but the developer is already prepared. For €100, he is offering a fully undetectable version. FUD. Fully undetectable version. It's called FUD.
That's awesome.
Anybody? Oh, irony. Which is not detectable by virus scanners. Yeah, he ran it through Chicago NI. Thank you very much. Free updates are again included. For €350, you can even buy the source code. Yeah, so the reason I read this story is the malware has already caught up with Windows 8. So,
well, to be fair, hasn't the Windows 8 release candidate been out for like a year?
Various versions of it, yeah.
So I mean, it's not like they haven't had anything to work with. It's not like, you know, it came out and they developed all this in like a couple of weeks.
It's also sure. Not that different from Windows 7, really.
Yeah. So, like, that it's...
Just... Still, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, it's still impressive, but it's not as impressive as just, like, you know, whipping this out of there, out of nowhere.
But, yeah. Well, I was just... Well, no matter how fast they put stuff out, it's how many people across the whole world work on making malware and all that for the current stuff. Nothing's going to last security-wise.
Oh, yeah. No, it's usually a contest when it comes out on the underground. It's like who can crack it first, right? So, but yeah, no, I just wanted to point it out. Windows 8 already has malware, of course. All computers have malware, even the Macs. The Macs just have less of it. So... Yeah, just don't click shit. Just, you know, when you get that email saying free Viagra, don't click that. When you get the email from Blizzard saying your account's been compromised, we thought you were trying to sell it, check the link and make sure it's actually going to Blizzard and not some site that's a little bit different. Or even better, open it in a VM and don't put any information into it. Like, okay, in all seriousness, a little tip on spam. If you get spam and you're not sure if it's real or not, first trick, throw the subject line into Google. See how many people are complaining about it being a scam. If nothing comes back from Google or you recognize the institution it's from, never click the links in the email. They can be manipulated. Usually they go somewhere else, or they like use a tiny URL or something like that. So if you get an email and you think it's from your bank and saying, hey, you need to go do this, you need to do that because something's wrong with your account, never click the link in the email. Go to the bank's website by typing the URL in. Oh my God, you have to actually hit 5 or 6 keys as opposed to clicking a link. And yeah, just trust me on that. Battle.net. Game servers, MMOs, all of it, same way, right? Anything that you could care about where you get an email saying, hey, something's wrong with your account, click this link to correct it, don't click the link. Go log into the account through the website that you always use to access it. That way you don't get shit on your machine and you don't have people stealing your passwords. Just a little tip. Next story up. This one's from The Consumerist. And I rarely cover stuff from The Consumerist because I don't much care for their writing style. But this is awesome. I actually paid AT&T $5 a month so I could block phone numbers before I switched to an Android phone. Because on the iOS, they don't have an app that does that.
Yep.
Because of this thing. For several years, American consumers have been receiving unwanted robocalls with a recorded message from Rachel or one of her fictional coworkers at the vaguely named Cardholder Services. Not only are these calls often in violation of do not call regulations, they are also a scam to trick people out of their cash. Today, the Federal Trade Commission announced that it has pulled the plug on 5 companies behind these scammy robocalls. At the FTC, Rachel from Cardholder Services is public enemy number one, said FTC Chairman John Leibowitz about today's actions, which also involved state agencies in Arizona, Arkansas, and Florida. The pre-recorded calls, if you don't hang up on them, claim to have an important message about a way for consumers to lower their credit card interest rates. Pressing 1 gets you a live telemarketer who talks you through the program, which allegedly deceptive offers have... Wait a minute. Which included allegedly deceptive offers to have their credit card interest rates substantially reduced, sometimes as low as 6.9 or even 0%. Some telemarketers allegedly told consumers they could save at least $2,500. Here we go. If I can read, right? I've already drank all of the whiskey, so you have to bear with me. I might be a little drunk. Could save at least $2,500 in finance charges and will be able to pay off their balances 2 to 3 times faster without increasing their monthly payments. In some cases, the telemarketers claim to be calling from the consumer's credit card company. In other cases, they use cardholder services to suggest a relationship with a bank or a credit card company. If the consumer expresses an interest in the rate reduction offer, the telemarketer sometimes conducts a purported audit to determine whether the consumer qualifies. Yeah, because a legitimate company wouldn't check that first. Most of them probably wouldn't anymore. Consumers provide their financial information and personal information, then put on hold while the audit is completed, according to the FTC. The audit is typically only used to determine whether consumers have enough credit available on their credit cards to pay the company's fee. Once approved for the program, the customer is then held about the upfront fee, ranging from several hundred dollars to nearly $3,000. Oh my God. I've never actually completed one of these things. I always hung up on them and eventually got their phone numbers blocked. The telemarketers would say that the large fee would be more than offset by the money saved through the program. Yeah. Anytime somebody wants upfront cash and says you're going to make it back, yeah, run away. Some consumers said their credit cards were charged the fee, even though they did not agree to. It's like, well, we got your card. We're just going to charge you anyways. Others said they were charged a fee without even being told there would be any upfront costs. As is the case with these scams, once the fee is paid, the company does little or nothing to actually reduce the customer's interest rates. The only thing that the companies do, the FTC said, is initiate a 3-way call to consumers' credit card issuers and orally request a rate reduction. Requesting the consumers to literally something you could do yourself, right? It's like, oh, hey, can I get my rate reduced? No. Oh, well, we tried. Thanks for the $3,000. I mean, pressing 2 supposedly removes you from future calls, but in reality, it doesn't. Furthermore, consumers could not proactively block these calls. The callers would use spoof phone numbers to caller ID. It also made it harder for consumers to complain about these calls, as the number showing up their phone was often unrelated to the actual caller. I will point out, I started adding all of the phone numbers I got that from to my block list. I had the AT&T. It's called parental controls. It's like meant for controlling who your kids can call. I turned it on my own phone, and I was able to block all of the numbers this thing was coming from, and it mostly stopped. Now that I've got an Android phone, a little app on it to do that, I've been able to turn that service off, and of course the calls haven't come back, which is nice. Just to finish out the story, all five companies are charged with making misrepresentations to consumers and violating the FTC Act, along with multiple violations of the telemarketing sales rule for misrepresenting their services, making illegal robocalls, and calling numbers on the Do Not Call registry and collecting upfront fees. So yeah, with any luck, those cardholder services calls are going to go away.
Nice. I haven't gotten one of these particular.
You never got one? Oh man.
No, I don't think so. Not that I can think of in the last while, but good to hear.
Once you get your phone number on one of those lists, man, I mean, it's just retarded.
I bet. Well, I was going to say, like, just like the email spam, we keep track of that kind of stuff at work, and it's funny because I read, you know, things on Slashdot about, you know, this spam botnet or whatever got taken out, you know, 5 million computers no longer sending spam, and looking at our email logs and stuff, you can actually see a difference in it. Kind of neat. I mean, at one point in time last year, we were getting over, I want to say it was around 1.5 to 1.6 million rejected email spams in a month, and now we're down to about 5 to 600,000. So, good difference.
Yeah, it's just nice seeing something like that taken out, and I'm so happy to see that one go, because it's really annoying. At one point, I was getting 5 or 6 calls a day from, yeah, Rachel,
that's ridiculous.
Services. Oh yeah, no, it's retarded. And I found out why my phone number got put on the those call lists, actually. It's great. Somebody had set up a fake credit card account, and it was full of misinfo. Like, it wasn't my credit card numbers, right? It wasn't any of my numbers. It wasn't my address, it wasn't my name, but it was my phone number.
Oh, that sucks.
And it was part of it, and I've had this phone number for years, and it was part of it that apparently whoever had done a massive credit card scam had just gone sequentially through a set of phone numbers, and mine just happened to be smack in the middle of it. So
that sucks, man.
Yeah, and all of those phone numbers ended up on the call lists, right?
Of course.
Yeah. All right, next story here. This one's from Ars Technica. On Monday, so that would have been last Monday, this story was written Saturday, I think. So it's going to make lots of references to the future that have actually already happened. On Monday, the U.S. Supreme Court will hear arguments in a case that will pit a major textbook publisher against Kersang. Am I saying that right? SUPAP, Supop.
You always pick the best stories with the most people that you can never say their names right.
Yeah, well, you know, I picked the stories ahead of time. You'd think I'd like Google how to say these things, right? Or punch them into a text-to-speech engine.
I wouldn't even do that. Every name that I couldn't pronounce, I would put Fred in.
All right, so
that's
major
what
textbook,
I would do.
Major textbook publisher against Fred, a student entrepreneur with a small business at importing and selling textbooks. Like many Supreme Court cases, though, there's more than meets the eye. It's not merely a question of whether the Thai-born Fred will have to cough up his profits as copyright infringer. But they're calling him a copyright infringer for importing and reselling the books. Damn.
Oh.
I skimmed the story earlier. I missed that bit. The case is a long-awaited rematch between content companies seeking to knock out the first sale doctrine on goods made abroad, not to mention their many opponents. That makes the Wiley versus Kersang the highest stakes intellectual property case of the year, if not the decade. It's not an exaggeration to say that the outcome could affect the very notion of property ownership in the United States. Since most consumer electronics are manufactured outside of the U.S. and include copyrighted software in it, A loss for Kersang would mean that copyright owners could tax or even shut down resales of everything from books to DVDs to cell phones. So, like, eBay, gone.
Let me get this right. So they're cracking down on copyright-wise of him reselling the physical books?
Yeah, he was purchasing them abroad. He was, like, ordering them online from other countries, where they're much, much cheaper than they are in the States, and then reselling them at a profit, but still much, much cheaper than going to the bookstore and buying them, right?
So tell me where in this copyright infringement is there copying?
Let me finish out the story here. We only got the first paragraph down, and I actually trimmed it down from the site too. Ars Technica is notorious for insanely long articles. The first sale is the rule that allows owners to resell, lend out, or give away copyrighted goods without interference. Along with fair use, it is the most important limitation on copyright. So Fred's Kersang's case has come to draw on a wide array of allies to his side. These include the biggest online marketplaces like eBay, brick-and-mortar music and game retailers, and Goodwill, all concerned they may lose their right to freely sell used goods. Even libraries are concerned for their right to lend out books bought abroad and could be inhibited. John Wiley & Sons, the textbook publisher suing Kersang, has said that its share of backers as well, including the movie and music industry, software companies, and other book publishers. Okay. Oh, I've read that wrong. Has their share of backers as well. Those companies argue differential pricing streams are vital to their success and they should be enforced by U.S. courts. In other words, they want it to be illegal if something is available domestically for you to buy it cheaper abroad. I can think of a lot of pharmaceutical companies that would be very happy about that ruling too. Now that too.
That's a good point.
Now, well, I know a lot of people import their drugs from Canada because they're much, much cheaper up there.
Mexico.
Prescription drugs from Mexico? Anyways. I'm sure people get drugs from Mexico. It's just a question of whether or not their doctor's involved.
No. They did. My grandma did it.
Oh, okay. Cool. That's medicinal, I swear. I'm sorry. I'm kidding.
Yeah, not that kind. But, you know, anyways.
Those companies argue different pricing streams are vital to their success and should be enforced by U.S. courts. Nearly 30 amicus briefs have been filed in all... Damn, everybody's watching this thing. Supporters of Kersang are mobilized following an alarming but not presidential loss in an earlier case, Omega versus Costco, on a call with reporters this week. Librarians and lawyers for pro-Kersang companies painted a stark picture of what might happen should he lose the case. If the appellate court ruling against Kersang is allowed to stand, they suggest copyright owners could start to chip away at the basic idea of you bought it, you own it. This is why almost everything you say is, no, you've licensed it. You haven't actually purchased it. It's because of that first sale doctrine. This case is an attempt by some brands and manufacturers to manipulate copyright law to control the distribution of pricing of legitimate, authentic goods, said eBay's top policy lawyer, Hillary Brill. When an American purchases an authentic item, she shouldn't have to ask for permission from the manufacturer to do with it what he wants. Tell people who make consoles that. They practically made it illegal to mod the things. Without first sale doctrine in place, content companies would be allowed to control the use of their goods forever. They could withhold permission for resale and possibly even library lending, or they could allow it, but only for an extra fee. It would have the wild effect of actually encouraging copyrighted goods to be manufactured offshore, since that would lead to much further reaching powers. When we purchase something, we assume it's ours, said Overstock.com, General Counsel Mark Griffin. What is proposed by the content companies is that we change the fundamental notion of ownership rights. Book publishers and other content industries allies say those concerns are overblown. No assault on libraries or garage sales is forthcoming, they argue. Notice they didn't say we're not going to shut down eBay. Those organizations simply have a right to set different prices abroad without being undermined in the U.S. by importation that they say is illegal. So, just a quick summary here. The content companies, the textbook maker, is saying it is illegal to import a textbook because they sell it domestically for much more than they're selling it abroad. And
so what,
if that stands, then it means that they're going to move all copyright protection offshore or production offshores, because then it gives them the right to say whatever the hell they want about reselling the stuff. Go ahead, BSV.
If they set the prices for other countries differently, that's what they choose. If somebody buys a copy, they can move it wherever they want, in my opinion. This case, or if it doesn't get thrown out, yeah, it's going to completely mess up any rights consumers have.
But think about it. I mean, you're going to get searched by customs for, where did you buy this book? Are you going to resell this book? What are you going to do with this book? I mean, come on. This
How
is
that
retarded.
Not capitalism? Buy something for a lower price, you go and sell it for a higher price. Rinse, repeat. Everyone does that.
So, theoretically, middlemen should be completely illegal.
Pretty much.
Yeah, which I don't mind that, but still.
Rights of company versus rights of individual, right? So, I mean, that's what they're talking about. They're talking about the company has the right to tell you what you can and cannot do with their product. And on that grounds, I'm certainly of the opinion of, no, once I bought it, it's mine. I can do whatever the hell I want with it. You know, if I want to open up my Xbox and stick a chip in it, that's my business.
Yeah. Go ahead, BSV.
If it's a physical object that, you have all the right of owning that object if you buy it. Unless you sign something that you're just leasing it, but unless they're going to make you sign a contract for every book you buy.
That's what the ebook makers do.
Yeah, but that's still a separate thing on its own.
True.
How is it different, though? I mean, just because it's digital and not a physical item, I don't think it's any different. That actually kind of reminded me of a story that you guys talked about last week about someone moving their stuff to their cloud. I forget what it was off the top of my head, but
it was that lady who had Amazon wipe out her Kindle and then wouldn't talk to her.
Yes, that's what it was. And it's the same thing, dude. Like, if I don't know. That's why I'm not a big, gung-ho for the cloud or anything like that. I don't know if you saw my comment in the shout box when I was listening to that show. I just wasn't able to be on it. But, once you move your files, even if you legitimately purchase them from someplace, once they're on someone else's servers, you don't have complete control over them. What's to stop them from saying, that game that you bought that you're storing on our cloud servers? We had this soccer mom, and she complained, and she says it's too violent, so we deleted it for you, because we deleted it off of all of our servers. And that money you spent for it, it's on our servers, so tough shit.
Yeah.
Well, that's completely... Well, that's somewhat relative, but it's kind of iffy, but this is a physical copy. You can't you're not multiplying it. It's you buy this book and sell it to another person.
Well, just on that notion, most college bookstores do that anyways. So if they say, no, you can't do that anymore, I think that that's going to do the cost of education. You can't buy used books.
Well, like my college, well, technically it wasn't a set up shop, but they pretty much set it up so you can, if somebody new needed a book, they're pretty much put to get two people, somebody who's selling a book who's finishing the program, just so they don't get in trouble that way. But still, it's no copying is involved, so copyright should be thrown away.
It's silly. I mean, it's just silly. Let's skip the Apple story. That's not as good as it initially looked when I read it earlier. The F-Secure. This one's from F-Secure. Washington Post has a long and interesting article series on the U.S. drone operations in Africa. The article has this interesting snippet taken from a declassified U.S. drone incident report. Air Force mechanics have reported mysterious incidents in which the airborne robots went haywire. In March of 2011, a Predator drone at the camp started its engine without any human direction, even though the ignition had been turned off and the fuel lines closed. Technicians concluded that a software bug had infected the brains of the drone, but never pinpointed the problem. After that whole starting itself incident, we were fairly wary of the aircraft and watched it pretty closely. An unnamed Air Force squadron commander testified to the investigative board, according to the transcript. Right now, I still think the software is not good. So first of all, Galaxy 15 supports the robot uprising, and we look forward to seeing the drones, you know, developing more of their self-awareness here. That said, the software that they're... Apparently, the software they're using on the Predator drones is crap, and they're kickstarting themselves on.
I'm really glad these drones that are equipped with weaponry, their programming is well tested, apparently.
Oh, yeah.
I just think it's going to be funny, because, like, if you're ever on one of these military bases, and, you know, getting a tour or something, like, yep, over there, see those mini planes, those are their drones, and, why do they all have cinder blocks tied to their wings? No reason. That's just so they won't take off on their own. Let's move on.
They're chained up and growling, strangely enough. Go ahead, BSB.
I was just making a joke.
Oh, that's good. I think we made our jokes on top of each other there.
Yeah.
But, that's just great. It's like the people operating it think the software is not very good, and they're kicking on by themselves. Predator drones are the ones that are sometimes armed with missiles, right? I mean, they've got cameras, definitely, but sometimes missiles.
Right.
Why are the missiles all going live?
It's just a software glitch. Don't worry about that. Yeah, tell that to Fred. He was in the building over there when it blew up.
Poor Fred. Yay.
Poor Fred.
No one can say his name. Now he's dead.
So we all just call him Fred. Wow.
Well, he could read his dog tag afterwards.
Oh, well, you know. So, let's see here. Last story I have for tonight's from the Register. Israeli police departments were pulled offline last Thursday following the discovery of a Trojan especially targeted at law enforcement networks in the Jewish state. So, there was a Trojan specifically targeting the Israeli police. The malware was distributed using spammed messages spoofed so they appeared to come from the head of the Israeli Defense Forces, Benny Gantz. The malicious emails contained the subject line, IDF strikes militants in Gaza Strip following rocket barrage, and a compressed .rar file was attached. Opening the dodgy attachment on a Windows machine leads to infection by the XRAT-B Trojan. Samples of the malware obtained by Trend Micro suggested that the initial target of the attack was systems within the Israeli Customs Agency. Based on our analysis, the backdoor is an extreme remote access Trojan. It's extreme rat. Except when nice. We talked about it at the opening of the show.
Right.
Like all rats, can be used to steal information and receive commands from a remote attacker. Ivan McIndale, a threat research manager at Trenrico Extremes, the extreme rat appears to have been used in previous attacks targeting Syrian anti-government activists. The Trojan features Windows 8 compatibility, as we talked about earlier, improved audio and desktop capture capabilities. And I love how this story is like an ad for this rat. As well as better routines for grabbing passwords saved in Chrome and Firefox. Antivirus firms are adding detection for both the spam messages and malicious files, but damage may already have been done. Rani Bakar, head of Israeli security firm Avnet, told the Times of Israel that police servers might have been compromised for up to a week before the outbreak was detected and quarantine procedures were applied. It was only late last Wednesday night that police realized what had happened and ordered the computers to be taken offline. Apparently, the virus was also distributed to other government departments. So I'm going to stop with the story there. Essentially, somebody bought Extreme Rat and was using it to target Israel, which I'm only picking on it because of all the stuff that happened with Stuxnet. So people are buying malware and using it to do espionage, you know? Which, on one hand, I'd rather people blow up computers than each other. I mean, it's more fun that way anyways, but...
Yeah. But just everywhere.
Like the last story, some computers can blow up other things.
That's true. Well, actually, if you think about it, getting into the customs machines could be really dangerous, because it's like, you know, oh, yep, there's the x-ray bomb with a candlestick on it. The system says it's approved. Okay, fine. Let's see here. That looks like a hairdryer with a scope. Yep, system says it's approved. Next. And, I mean, I could see some problems with that, but I just found it really funny that there's this story about this extreme rat getting into Israeli systems that somebody had specifically set up a spam message to dump the thing out. So, I don't know. Did nobody else find that amusing?
No, totally.
That just
do.
Made me think of a sports drink called Extreme Rat.
You know, it's Celtic. Well, oh, what was the YouTube video? Power Thirst Extreme.
Oh, there you go. Power Thirst Extreme.
Oh, man. I wish I had that clipped out. I'd play it at the end of the show, but
it'll make you run fast like Kenyans.
God.
Oh, I love that video.
I don't
it's
need
hilarious.
To clip it. Sard can do the whole damn thing for us.
Fucking Kenyans.
Speaking of Kenyans, it's time for this.
Me laugh you long time.
All right, for Digital Dojo tonight, I haven't had a chance to test this, but it looks like a lot of fun. And I've got a couple of links here. I'm trying to think how to explain it. Okay, Hack 5 has made a device called the USB Rubber Ducky. And as silly as it sounds, what it is it's a programmable USB HID device. It shows up on the system like a keyboard. Essentially, and they've put together a scripting language for the rubber ducky that is really simple, really easy to work with, so that you can program this thing to do all kinds of stuff. And from their wiki, the USB rubber ducky isn't your ordinary HID. Coupled with powerful 60 megahertz, 32 megabit processor, and a simple scripting language, anyone is able to craft payloads capable of changing system settings, opening back doors, retrieving data, initializing reverse shells, or basically anything that can be achieved with physical access, all automated and executed in a matter of seconds. So, yeah, because the thing shows up like a keyboard, right? It's a USB device that shows up like a keyboard, and you can script it. Now, Hack 5 sells these things, and they're rather expensive at like $60. So what I found was this blog, control-alt-narwhal.wordpress.com.
That's awesome, by the way.
Yeah, I love the name. The author, and I'm reading directly from his post here, I mean the author of this blog, did some work on the other night and found a tool called the Leo Stick, an Arduino with USB HID capability. I have had some more good news, seeing as the Leo Stick can pretend to be a USB HID device, can do the exact same thing that a rubber ducky can do, but much cheaper. And the author happens to have an Arduino Leonardo laying around, which is the same thing as the Leo Stick. It's just bigger. Same, it's like similar chips. So he spent an hour or two writing a quick shell script that can convert Ducky scripts payloads into a sketch suitable for uploading to the Leo Stick or any Arduino that has USB HID capability. The end result is a small bash script which can be downloaded, and I've got the link in the show notes there. So he wrote it for this USB Leo or Arduino Leonardo, but I'd be willing to bet this thing would work with the Tensys that are very popular as well. I haven't had a chance to test it. I was going to test it this evening, but stuff happened and Minecraft and all that fun stuff. So essentially, you take this very simple rubber ducky scripting language, which, by the way, has lots of example scripts already out there, and you convert them into scripts for either this USB Leo or the latest Arduinos can do this as well. I am totally blanking what they are. But the very latest ones that just came out can actually do this as well. The Tensy can do them, and apparently this Leo can do them. So you run these rubber ducky scripts through this system, and now you've got a $20 Arduino that can do the same thing as like the $60 rubber ducky. And if you really want it to look like a rubber ducky, you can go get a rubber ducky at Walmart for like $2 and cut a hole in it and put the thing in it. So, but not knocking Hack 5. Hack 5 does awesome stuff. It's just they've got markup. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
What kind of payloads are we talking about with this thing?
Well, it's emulating a keyboard generally. So if you wanted to have it go pull like an executable down off a website and kick it off, or, you know, pull down the extreme rat and run it. you could have it do that. You could have it, like, if you knew the system it was going on, like, if you knew it was going on a Unix system, you could just have it, you know, pull up a Netcat shell and connect back to your box, give you a shell on it. Or maybe you just wanted it, you know, as like a practical joke, like, every 15 minutes, right-click the mouse and change the wallpaper to a My Little Pony background. You could probably script that up.
Nice.
So, yeah, I mean, or even if you wanted to do it, like, as the, what's the prank where it randomly starts holding shift or not shift?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think ThinkGeek sells something that does that for, like, $5. So, you know, you could have it do that, too. But, I mean, it's just, you can write a script for pretty much anything that somebody could do sitting at a keyboard, right?
Okay.
So, you know, great, you put together a script to open up Windows command prompt, hammer out some PowerShell script, and run it. Well, great. You've got you can compromise any system you get physical access to, or you can get somebody else to plug the thing into.
So what I'm thinking is, like, so it shows up as a separate keyboard. So therefore, even if you're interacting with the desktop with someone already logged on, just happen to say, you know, like, what if they open a Notepad as this thing is executing? Rather, is it going to send those keystrokes to Notepad rather than the terminal, or because it shows up as a separate HID device, that won't happen, or
it I'm will just trying happen. To think.
Okay, that's what
every
I was
time
just
I played around with doing this with a 10C. Yeah, no, it's if you've got something else going on in this, it's not in the state the script's expecting. Yeah, you break stuff, and most of these scripts are written with the expectation that the person has left, and you know it's just sitting at a desktop. Which, by the way, you can Iron Geek has a great video where he was experimenting with 10Cs, and he put a little IR sensor on it so that, like, when they turned off the lights, that's when the script ran because it assumed nobody was sitting at the keyboard at that point.
Oh, that's a cool idea.
And you know, usually when you're going to kick these scripts off, right? You know, you're right. If Notepad is in focus and you have it start hammering out scripts, so you're going to want to have it start from, I don't know where it is, I need to get to a known state. So on a Windows box, the first thing you're going to do is hammer the Start key or Control Escape, right? So that you get the Start menu and then have it pull up CMD or PowerShell or whatever, just, you know, however you want to go about doing it, usually through the Run dialog. Like, you know, so it'd do Control Escape, Control R, which should get you a Run box no matter where you are in Windows. And then, you know, it starts hammering in its commands from there. But that's a question of scripting. That's, you know, how good is your rubber ducky script, right?
Okay, so. Okay. That makes sense. I was just wondering, like, I mean, if it could be a kind of like a plug-in, wait 10 seconds and go type thing, which it sounds like you could. I mean, like I said, it would depend on your script. You know, plug it in, have it launch, download some process, launch the process, and then unplug it and keep moving on type thing and... There you go.
The script from Control Alt and Alt and R well gives you an Arduino sketch. So there's no reason saying you couldn't edit the sketch after the fact, maybe wrap the whole thing up in a function. So maybe you want it to wait until, I don't know, a certain amount of time has elapsed, or maybe you've got a sensor of some sort on the back of it, or maybe you've hooked it up to a Bluetooth, you know, they're called shields on Arduino, right? So maybe you hooked it up to a Bluetooth shield and it's waiting to get a message from your phone to start trying to hammer stuff off. So there's lots of stuff out there for doing this stuff with 10Cs and other Arduinos, but I thought this was a neat one in that they were taking one device and making scripts to make it run on the general ones. So
that's cool.
Yeah. But anyways, that's pretty much all I had for tonight. I thought that one was... You know, kind of fun. Of course, listen to the stream. Sard and I are constantly working on it, looking for new music. I'd like to get some live DJs as soon as I get. We're gonna have a capability to support that very soon. I'm actually working on that. Probably some this weekend.
Yeah,
I already know how to do it. It's just automating it.
Excellent. That'll be sweet.
And let's see here. Of course, Pure Decking every Thursday. Shoot the Noise on Wednesdays. NR7 on Mondays. Assuming we can get, you know, a cattle prod out and find BSV. He's usually pretty good at hiding on Mondays when he's not ducking politicians. No response, really? Just not going to dignify that one, huh?
You get a grunt. That's what you get.
I got a grunt. The Galaxy 15 radio site and the Twitter handle. Of course, we've got Twitter set up to whenever we update the site, it updates Twitter. It's an easy way to keep up. Use the feedback form. We like getting feedback. It, you know, validate our existence. No.
Please.
We like knowing we're not just screaming at the internet, man. Come on. And, of course, the shout box. Always use the shout box. I'm getting ready to go look at it after the show. I don't watch it during the show because I might get a little obsessive if I did that. So.
You don't watch it 24/7?
I try. I really do. But that's pretty much all I've got tonight. So unless anybody else has something they want to add, I'm going to hit the play button on the music here.
Pickles.
Not impossible.